Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ahí va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Özil marca. Mesut Özil centra. Chamberlain vuelve. Gol.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arscast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnerblog. And James, I think it is a goodly morning. Goodly morning to you.
Goodly morning to you, and goodly morning to you at home as well. It does feel goodlier than it has for quite some time. I'm enjoying it.
Yeah. I like an element of goodliness in my life, you know. And if Arsenal can provide that, then all the better. And, you know, there's a lot to feel goodly about when you beat Jose Mourinho, because it doesn't happen that often.
No, it doesn't. Not to us, at any rate. So, you know, let's savour it.
Well, not
you,
to,
know, you never know when the next one's going to come along.
Not to anyone, because they were on a remarkable unbeaten run, James. 25 games. They were invincible for those 25 games. And in those 25 games, they really set the standard, didn't they? They rose from the heady heights of 6th to 5th. Just incredible stuff from United.
So many draws. Ladies and gentlemen, the unwatchables. Here they come. with Marouane Fellaini as their spearhead.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, no, look, I don't miss them. I mean, you know, maybe they did miss him yesterday, but good to see the back of that unbeaten run. That is one of the worst unbeaten runs in recent memory, I would have to say.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of coming off the back of the Xhaka goal, coming off the back of Ander Herrera, I have to say, I mean, he's the kind of player that if he was on your team, you'd probably like him a lot, because he's a snide little fuck and, you know, he's cynical, he does those kind of fouls. But when you couple him with Manchester United, with Jose Mourinho, and the fact that he was screaming yesterday, I was trying to figure out what on earth was going on. I was sitting there working because I was doing the live blog, doing the match report, so I was, you know, not totally 100% focused on everything that was going on, and I could just hear screaming from times. I was going, what is happening? Am I hearing things? Is there something? Am I having some kind of pre-stroke episode here where I'm hearing screaming that there is no screaming? But no, according to Tim Stillman, it was the East Lower Stand screaming at Herrera because he had a big scream when he went down in the first half pretending to hurt his head. Maybe he did hurt his head, I don't know, but I thought that was fantastic. Some excellent fanning there from the Arsenal fans, you know, who've been, I suppose, over the course of this season, criticised for not getting behind the team enough. But if there's anything that brings football fans together quicker than a wanker on the other team, I don't know what it is.
Absolutely. I mean, it was, you couldn't pick a better player for that deflected goal to come off. Herrera is all kinds of evil. It's like Jose Mourinho extracted the DNA from Ramirez and sort of put it into a new player. And, you know, when Ramirez got sent off to China, he was like, oh, God, I'm going to have to find somebody else. And Herrera. Go on.
No. I just had images of Jose Mourinho sucking the DNA out of Ramirez, and I just thought
what
I'd share
image.
That.
Yeah, what an image. And also, let's not forget that Herrera obviously didn't get out to close Xhaka down. He then turned his back, and that was put in such stark contrast by the greatest block attempt in Arsenal Street from Francis Coquelin later in the game.
What the fuck was that? I paused the game as I was watching it. I actually paused it and went back and I looked at it. I rewinded the game as it was going on and I had to go back and look at it. It was, I mean, look, you can't fault the commitment, I guess.
I want someone to get that, put it in slow motion, and just put the Superman music over it. He just launches himself. I mean, it's genuinely one of the strangest things I've ever seen on a football pitch.
Particularly as he just he gets nowhere near the ball, thankfully, because he's there. He's got his hands in the air. Like, it could easily have been a penalty if the ball had hit his hand. I don't think you could, you know, I know the whole hands being in a natural position thing is a load of shit anyway, but like, if you fly through the air and the ball hits your hand, there's going to be a penalty. But what made it amazing for me was A, the fact that Rooney shot over for about the 12th time in the game, but B, Coquelin, he just landed on his arse. Yeah. Just arse first on the ground after throwing himself in the direction of the ball. It was brilliant.
The question is it a penalty if it's within the confines of the penalty box, but 50 feet in the air, with Coquelin rising above the, you know, the parapet of the stadium? I don't know. Look, the guy hasn't really had a place in the team of late. And let's just say he was prepared to put it all on the line to try and get back in the side there. You can't fault, as you say, you cannot fault his commitment.
No, true. You'd rather see that than a player doing what Herrera did. That's for sure.
Absolutely.
That is for sure. And look, you know, there's always something to enjoy after you win against Manchester United. You know, I feel like we should just deal with that without having to go down the road of caveats about it not solving all our problems and everything else. But, you know, going into the game, I really had no idea what was going to happen. No idea whatsoever. I couldn't figure it out one way or the other, whether we were going to turn up, whether they were going to turn up, what sort of team they were going to put out, what way they were going to approach the game, how we might play. And in the early stages, I was a little bit worried because we got opened up a couple of times. I think Rooney had a header that went wide and he played a nice pass to Martial who forced a save out of check. And you were looking at our back three and particularly down the left-hand side where the right-hand side from our point of view where Oxlade-Chamberlain I still think has issues defensively, and you're going, ooh, it's actually a bit easy to open us up. And it was quite a lively opening 10, 15 minutes.
It was, and actually, in that first half, you know, Petr Cech made two really important saves. He was, you know, the only guy who came away from White Hart Lane with any real credit.
Yeah.
Made some important stops in that game. And then two big ones in this one from Martial, you mentioned, and later from Wayne Rooney after that errant Rob Holding back pass. So, yeah, I mean, that was a little bit worrying. They seemed to be able to find space in the channels. But it was a strange game because it felt like it started quite brightly and then it kind of dropped off, and there was a period between, I don't know, about halfway through the first half and maybe the Granit Xhaka goal just a bit into the second, where a lot of the intensity that you would associate with this fixture really kind of came out of the game.
Absolutely. I mean, they were sitting so deep. I mean, it'll sum it up. Here is the live blog that I was doing yesterday. Minute 51, United possession. Minute 51, this game is dull as fuck. Minute 51, really needs something to liven it up. Like the introduction of a velociraptor. 2 minutes later. 2 minutes later, United possession. 53 minutes. Nothing is happening. 54. Gibbs gets free down the left. Then puts in the kind of cross to ensure that nothing continues to happen. But wait! Goal! And then we have Granit Xhaka's goal on 54 minutes, where it just felt like he was so cheesed off with nothing happening. He said, well, fuck it, I might as well have a go here, because it was unbelievably dull stuff. That after that Rooney chance in the first half, that period between the end of the first half and the first 10 minutes of the second half were just, it was like in some ways Jose Mourinho had sucked the life out of the game like he sucked the DNA out of Ramirez.
Indeed. Indeed, he's always sucking these things. But I think that you know that's his plan, isn't it? You look at Juan Mata and Henrik Mkhitaryan on Sky. They pointed out how deep they were always playing as kind of second fullbacks, and we've seen him go to places like Anfield this season and produce these incredibly dull games, and that was clearly the game plan here. I mean, he did leave a couple of big players out, Pogba and Rashford on the bench, and it looked like he came to the Emirates Stadium and thought, right, I'm just going to shut this game down. Hopefully they won't, you know, be too confident after losing at Spurs, and I'll be able to come away with a draw.
Yeah.
And it needed, I guess it needed a stroke of luck to change that. But, you know, in the case of Xhaka, I mean, you know, Gary Neville said on the television, he was like, oh, when he got the ball there, I thought he's not going to shoot from there. I was at home thinking, Do you know what? A lot of the time, these cries of shoot for Xhaka are probably inappropriate. But in this instance, why not? I mean, genuinely, there was nothing doing. There was nothing going on. There wasn't much movement in the Arsenal team. United were so packed defensively. It's that old adage, if you don't buy a ticket, you can't win the lottery. And if you don't, you know, aim the ball roughly at Ander Herrera, you can't see him fuck up like that. So you might as well have a go. And obviously, it was very fortuitous, but... look, I was delighted by it.
Yeah, sure. Look, I think there is an element of good fortune, certainly in the finish. But when you look at the way that move happened, we had a throw over on our right-hand side. Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain sort of threw the ball bobbling into midfield. Infield, like, you very rarely see that kind of a throw-in because teams are... set up and organized, and they just don't allow you to do that. If you look at how slowly the ball came to Xhaka, it was bouncing. There wasn't a United player anywhere near him. It was remarkable because part of what makes Mourinho's sides effective and good at shutting down games like this and getting the draws is ensuring that this really basic stuff does not happen, that when someone throws the ball in, they're going to have a man on them, certainly when you're in side of the United area. So it was really weird to see United so standoffish. And I think that's a mistake. Clearly a mistake for Manchester United. If it had been at the other end, we would be going absolutely berserk at our players not closing down the opposition and giving someone like Xhaka, who is capable of hitting the ball well from distance, time to shoot. Of course, there was some luck when it hit off Herrera's back, but that's their own fault for not defending the throw-in well enough, if you ask me.
Yeah, it's a double fault from Herrera, really, because not only does he turn his back, but he's the guy, really, who should be getting out to Xhaka. And any player, really, 30 yards from goal, you know, shouldn't be allowing them a free crack on target. So, yeah, it was an unusual defensive error, but one we capitalised upon. And I guess, it was quite the 3 minutes, wasn't it? Because it felt, I was still kind of celebrating the first goal almost when the second went in.
Yeah. Yeah, I do like that. When you score a couple of goals in really quick succession. We were on the wrong end of it last week, of course, in the North London Derby, and you know how debilitating it is to a team when that happens because you haven't even got time to consolidate or get yourself organised again from the first one, and now you're another goal down, and that really does damage confidence and belief and your ability to get back into a game. A good goal, a really good... really good finish from Danny Welbeck, but I've got to give some props to Rob Holding, who kept the ball alive very well on the right-hand side. He won the tackle and then played the ball to Oxlade-Chamberlain. Great cross, and Welbeck's header was absolutely brilliant. Not only did it fly past the keeper, it went in off the underside of the crossbar, which, as we know, makes a goal about 40% better.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, this was one of those where you could sort of hear it crack off the crossbar, which I really enjoyed. I mean, it's probably not actually the best technique. Probably people would say, get it down, you know, make sure you don't knock it over the bar. But aesthetically, absolutely beautiful. And Oxlade-Chamberlain produced a brilliant cross at Old Trafford, wasn't it, for Olivier Giroud to score the equaliser there. And another very good one in this game. And yeah, look... I love Danny Welbeck scoring against Manchester United and celebrating. It's such a simple thing, but I take such pleasure in it.
The fact that he celebrates.
Yeah, well, I like the goals, but the fact that he celebrates, yeah, I like his kind of one-man crusade to put an end to this no-celebration nonsense.
It is, you can sort of understand it if it's a player who's... you know, has been at a club a really long time and maybe the goal is damaging in some way. You know, I can sort of see it. I'm not necessarily on board with it, but I kind of understand it to an extent. But I think you're absolutely right. There's just no thought in his mind that I'm not going to celebrate. I mean, United said basically to Danny Welbeck, we don't think you're good enough. You can go. And why shouldn't he celebrate? That's what he said afterwards. You know, when you score, you're happy. Why wouldn't you celebrate? So...
that's it. And I saw a stat on Twitter from Chris Wheatley, who said that the goal, a Chamberlain cross for Welbeck, was the first time that two English players have combined for a Premier League goal for Arsenal since December 2014. The British core is back.
So who was December 2014? Is it Ox
that was
and
also Chamberlain for Welbeck at West Ham, away at West Ham.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, those two have got a thing going on, don't they? Just, you know, 3 years apart.
Such an answer. To be fair, Danny Welbeck has basically been injured for all that time. So maybe they do have a really productive understanding.
Yeah. What did you think of Welbeck up front? I don't think he'd any choice. Arsene Wenger said after the game that, you know, his goal-scoring record against Manchester United was a factor, and the fact that he, you know, would give that bit extra against his old club, that was a factor in his selection as well. But, I mean, I can't believe that that was really his decision. It was because I think Olivier Giroud had been so poor and the team had been so poor against Tottenham that he had to change something, and he really didn't have any other option.
Yeah, I think he's being kind to Giroud there. I mean, look, Welbeck's record against United is good. I think it's three goals he scored against them now, which is not too bad at all. But I think, you know, Welbeck had to start for me. And actually, I mean, we'll probably get onto the defence, but I was encouraged by the starting lineup when it came out. I wanted to see Welbeck in at centre forward.
Mm.
And I wanted to see Rob Holding in at centre back too. I thought there were two, you know, big-ish calls from Arsene Wenger. And I think they both paid dividends. I know Holding had some nervy moments. But Welbeck, you know, we're just a better side there. We're just more flexible in attack with him there. He's able to interchange with Alexis. He offers a bit of movement in behind. This wasn't a game in which he saw loads of the ball, and I, you know, I don't dispute that Olivier Giroud probably could have scored that goal that he scored too, but I just think we look a more functional attacking unit with him there in this system, certainly.
Look, I think he should get a run of games, to be perfectly honest. The goal will have done his confidence a lot of good. You can see there are moments where he's almost doubting himself. You know, there was one moment where he took a ball down brilliantly in the box and his second touch was awful. But I do feel like maybe if he got a run of games between now and the end of the season, he could produce for us. And we do have Giroud on the bench as that plan B, if you like, and an effective one as well. People in their, I suppose, disenchantment with seeing Giroud starting games, it's easy to forget that he can be a really effective guy when you need him off the bench.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I think, you know, there's plenty to play for in our league campaign still, but we've got to have one eye on the cup final. And I think it's kind of about getting the team in shape for that. And I want Welbeck to be starting at Wembley, and I think we need to bed him in over the next few games. And as you say, build his confidence up. I really hope, I mean, we don't know exactly what his fitness is like, but I really hope he's continuing in the starting lineup at Southampton on Wednesday.
Mm. So, three at the back again. Rob Holding in for Gabriel. Interesting that Holding, of course, has played on the right-hand side of the back three. He played on the left-hand side of the back three when Gabriel was playing on the other side. Mustafi, obviously.
It's not it's not the back three you would necessarily imagine, you know, Koscielny, of course, but Monreal on one side, kind of a repurposed fullback, and then Holding on the other, a young player. You know, in a big game against Manchester United, that's quite an unconventional back three to have gone with. I know Arsenal's options are limited to an extent, but, I mean, you can't argue with the clean sheet, can you?
No, not really. And I think when Mustafi comes back in, I'd be quite interested to see a back three of Mustafi, Koscielny and Holding, just to see what that would be like. You know, you made the point a couple of weeks ago that Mustafi has played a lot of football at right back, so should be able to slot into that right central defensive role pretty well, and it will give him a bit more license to push up the way that he likes to push up, knowing that Koscielny will be behind him and he'll have Holding in there as well. And I think, you know, then you're looking at Monreal back at wing back. If you've got that back three, I think that gives us more on the left-hand side going forward. I thought Kieran Gibbs was grand, but once he got into the final third, there wasn't a lot going on, whereas I think Monreal is a bit more productive. And what will be an interesting one for me is Oxlade-Chamberlain versus Hector Bellerin. I think the manager's got a bit of a decision to make there. In the long
it's interesting,
term,
isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, I had a horrible thought yesterday, and I hope I'm wrong about it, but you don't think there's any sort of sense of, well, there have been all these stories in the Spanish Catalan media about Bellerin, you know, this is the perfect summer to get him. You don't think there's any sense of Oxlade-Chamberlain being a better long-term bet in terms of his future with the club?
I think he's probably the right man for this moment. for this moment in time, in that he's obviously producing, he's feeling quite confident, he seems to be relatively happy in that position. It's able to get a bit out of him from an attacking point of view, but I do feel like it's not really where he's going to end up in the very long term. Although, you know, you look at someone like Victor Moses doing that job at Chelsea, and you're thinking, well, I never would have had Victor Moses down as a regular starter for Chelsea, and certainly not in that position. But he's doing it. But I do wonder, you know, if it's just a case that the Ox is in decent form and his confidence is up. And Hector, I mean, even when he came on yesterday, Hector Bellerin, in the last couple of minutes, there was a moment when I think it was Rashford went down the left-hand side for United. And Hector, he just looks slow. He looks sluggish. I don't quite know what it is, whether it's a fitness thing or anything else. But, you know, when they celebrated the goal, Welbeck celebrated the goal. He came over and did some handshakes with Alex Iwobi. You know, Hector was there on the sideline looking very happy. And, you know, he doesn't look particularly disgruntled. But, you know, I feel like if it's something we're going to stay with, this back three, if Arsene Wenger does stay, and if we are going to stay with a back three, I think I would prefer to see Bellerin as the right wing back in the long term.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. I mean, if you're sticking with the back three, I think we've got potentially one of the very best wing backs in the world in Hector Bellerin. I mean, the system could, you know, couldn't be designed better for his strengths, really, in terms of what he offers going forward. I think where Oxlade-Chamberlain has the edge at the moment partly is his final delivery. I mean, Bellerin is definitely stronger defensively, especially having played right back all this time, but I can't remember too many crosses this season from Bellerin quite of the calibre that Oxlade-Chamberlain is producing at the moment. And I think that's probably in Arsene's mind. I also wonder if, you know, we talked about Bellerin's future. Let's not forget Oxlade-Chamberlain's future is up in the air too. And maybe there's an extent to which, as well as Ox is playing, Arsene's wanting to make him feel valued and part of the team. We've seen that before. You remember when Theo Walcott was in contract negotiations, suddenly he was playing every week and getting chances up front and what have you. And I do wonder if there's a bit of, you know, pacification going on there because, you know, Ox's future's not guaranteed. So at the moment, it feels like the right call. And there's not much time, is there, between now and the end of the season? You know, if you've got one eye on the cup final, there's not much time for Bellerin to come back in and re-establish himself. And it's not like we have fixtures in which we can afford to experiment.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting because I read Oxlade-Chamberlain recently talking about how he missed out in the 2014 FA Cup final. He didn't get in the squad that day because he'd been injured and he was absolutely gutted not to have been part of the squad. And obviously was delighted we won the cup, but felt a bit detached from it on the day. And again, I think there was an issue in the 2015 final where he didn't start. And again, he felt very unhappy about that because, of course, every player wants to start an FA Cup final at Wembley. I think he came on and didn't he make the last goal for Giroud. I think he got down the right-hand side and Giroud scored the fourth goal against Aston Villa. So he did combine. He came on and made a contribution on the day. But I'm sure now, this time around, that he has got the FA Cup final very much in his sights. I wonder, you know, if that's going to play a part in the manager's thinking about what he does in terms of his team on that day. I mean, look, there's still, what, four games to go in the Premier League, so there's a lot of football still to play before that. So I think he's going to have to rotate that position a little bit between Bellerin and Oxlade-Chamberlain, but I think Oxlade-Chamberlain has the upper hand at this moment in time. I just wonder if it's the long-term, the best long-term solution for him and for us. So we'll see. But look, it's a good problem to have.
It's a good problem to have, and basically it's a problem caused by a player being in really good form. So, if there is an opportunity to rotate, I'm looking at the fixtures now, you'd have to think that Sunderland home game. You'd never want to take anything for granted, but that would be the one, probably, wouldn't it, when Arsene might change it around a bit.
Yeah, look, I mean, we've got two games this week, though. We've got Southampton away on Wednesday. We've got Stoke away on Saturday. So I think there may well be There may well be a need to rotate a little bit as well. Slightly worrying that Granit Xhaka went off injured, seemed to have a bit of a calf problem. We're not quite sure how serious that might be at this moment in time, but that would be a bit of a blow as well, wouldn't it? Because I think yesterday he really showed what he can bring to this team in the sense that he passed the ball beautifully, spread the ball. He's got this really interesting technique when he when he passes the ball. Have you noticed it? The way that he sort of wraps his foot around the ball.
Yeah, it's almost like a kind of
topspin on topspin on a tennis shot or something.
And what it means is that when the ball hits the deck, it kind of dies. It doesn't really bounce or roll on significantly, I seem to find. So he's able to sort of place it, drop it almost into the path of players. It is fascinating. That calf problem, is that what he was struggling with in the build-up to the game?
No, I think that was an ankle problem that he had, that he got a kick on the ankle during the Tottenham game. And that was the problem. He had a swollen ankle. But whether the swollen ankle has played into a calf problem, I don't know if it was even the same one. But when he was getting treatment on the pitch, he was certainly talking to Colin Lewin and pointing to the back of his calf. So that would be a bit of a worry. Because I think
it would be a shame.
Yeah.
Because he, not only was he very good yesterday, I mean, some great passing numbers in terms of his accuracy and just the sheer amount of distribution he was managing to get in. I mean, granted, we see Xhaka at his best when teams do tend to sit deep and sit off him. I think, you know, when he's put under close pressure, that's when he's still needs to improve in those areas. But when he's got time on the ball, he's so effective. But the other thing about Xhaka, of course, is that his partnership with Aaron Ramsey, I thought, looked as good as it has yesterday. And Ramsey had his best game for a while, in my eyes.
Yeah, I mean, his movement was superb. We know he's great at getting into the box, and the timing of his runs was really excellent. He almost got on the end of a great Alexis pass, and he and Alexis seemed to work quite well together, in the sense that Alexis knew Ramsey was going to be making those runs. And I think it's really important when you're trying to break down a team who are sitting deep and parking the bus the way Manchester United did, that you have a player who at least tries to get between the lines, at least gives you an option to try and find a pass. Some of Alexis's passing was wayward, as it always is, but there were some great moments between him and Ramsey. I mean, Alexis went berserk, didn't he, at one point when he put Ramsey in behind. Ramsey was strong, played the ball back for Welbeck, and Alexis wanted a pass back into his path. But, there were some promising signs there. There were a couple of, you know, iffy moments from Ramsey, but he worked really hard, and he is a guy who can try and make things happen. Particularly noticeable yesterday when both Alexis and Ozil were very deep. They were looking to influence the game from deep areas, from in front of the Manchester United defence. So without someone like Ramsey giving you runs into the box and pulling defenders away, it's going to be very difficult to do that.
Yeah, I don't know. Did you see Arsene Wenger's interview with Thierry Henry before the game? It seems somewhat prescient now looking back, because Arsene was asked about the new system, the three at the back, and his reasons for introducing it. And one of the things he cited was that he felt it gave a player like Ramsey the security to break forward, knowing that there's an extra defender behind to cover. It enables him to do that. Which, you know, proved to be the case during the game. But another thing was that Thierry Henry asked Arsene Wenger about Alexis and Ozil dropping so deep all the time, particularly in the Spurs game he referenced. And Arsene again talked about how, you know, both are players who sort of want to come to the ball and get involved in the build-up. I don't know, what do you make of it, really? I mean, I was watching the game yesterday thinking Alexis is making some good passes from deep, but I can't help but wish we could get him on the ball in more advanced areas too.
Yeah, for sure. Or get him on the end of passes like the ones that he's making, because, again, his movement is really fantastic. I don't think Arsene Wenger was that convincing when he was talking to Thierry Henry about that, because Henry was saying, look, if me and, who was it, Dennis Bergkamp, did he say? I can't remember. But if we had been picking the ball up that deep in front of our centre halves, they would have gone mad. They would have, you know, gone crazy at us.
I said Gilberto and Vieira would be telling us to get out of their zone.
That's exactly what it was, yeah. And I don't think Arsene Wenger had a really good answer when it comes to Ozil and Alexis, and I do wonder if there's an element of him somewhat just accommodating them for you know, to keep them happy in a way, whereas I think he could demand a little bit more from them. I think they could help stretch the play a bit more than they do. And I thought there were some good signs. There was some nice stuff from Ozil yesterday as well, some good runs. But I do feel like this three at the back, if it has made us a bit more defensively solid, I think there's still work to do in terms of how exactly we balance ourselves from an attacking point of view. Because if Xhaka is nominally the one guy who's holding to give Ramsey that security to go forward, Ramsey's got to get a bit more support from the striker, I guess, but also from Alexis and Ozil, who've got to be a little bit more ambitious themselves rather than sitting as deep as they did. I'd like to see a little bit more, but I guess it's trying to figure out exactly how to do that and how to make those movements count.
Yeah, that's it. I think you're right. I think we are more defensively solid, and our record shows that. We've managed to keep clean sheets against Leicester and now Man United. But yesterday was the first game that we've won by more than a one-goal margin with this system. So, it's not like we're a particularly devastating attacking force right now. And I think partly that's confidence, of course, but I also think it's a tactical thing of players not really fully understanding their roles yet. And I think in the case of particularly Alexis, almost, I think, kind of understandably, he's probably being a little bit indulged and given a level of freedom that benefits us in some ways, but in others doesn't necessarily help. And I think, actually, the centre-forwards in this system have generally struggled to have much of an impact in the game. I know it's mainly been Olivier Giroud, and we think he's been ill-suited to the system, but even when Welbeck has come on, he hasn't necessarily been granted enough space by players stretching the play or had brilliant service. So I think on the attacking front, you know, that we still need to click into gear, really.
Yeah, I do wonder, you know, because there's such an onus on the wing-backs to get forward and to produce in the final third, that when they do that, everything else sort of has to come central. Mm. And it feels like it's a little bit difficult to break down opposition if they do what United did yesterday and sit really, really deep, that perhaps it doesn't provide you with as much space as it might or as you would hope. So I do think there's work to do from an attacking point of view or figuring out ways to pull defences apart a little bit more. And involving the centre forward.
I think so. But I think also if you look at Chelsea playing this system, or even Spurs when they use it, they do tend to score quite a lot of goals on the counter-attack. You know, the pace of Hazard, the pace of Pedro, Son at Spurs. And I think we were doing that in the early part of the season with Ozil and Alexis breaking at speed and Walcott too. Mm. But we haven't really done that as effectively in the second half of the campaign. And I think that is linked with confidence and conviction and making the right decisions on the break. And let's hope that can come back sooner rather than later.
Yeah, that's a really good point, actually. Our counter-attacking is... it leaves a lot to be desired. As much as you say confidence and belief has got to play a part, you know, just basic decision-making and moving the ball more quickly would really help in that regard. So, it would be good to see... It would be good to see an improvement there. I do wonder if we do have players who just like to take too many touches on the ball rather than move it and shift it and, you know, get on the end or get into the space and try and find a pass. So
We've got a few of those. I mean, you know, Alexis is obviously one. Even Ramsey was great. Yes, he can be prone to an extra touch. And there were a couple of chances yesterday for us to break efficiently and we didn't quite manage it. So, yeah, that's definitely something to keep an eye on.
Yeah. But in general, then, as difficult as top four is going to be, and I still think it is going to be very difficult, Liverpool drop points against Southampton, who, of course, we play on Wednesday. And, you know, if we can win our games and if they keep dropping points, then I suppose it's not out of the question that we might finish there. But it is about following up what we did yesterday with a win at St. Mary's, which is going to be easier said than done.
Yeah, I think that's a really tough game. I mean, it's two tough games this week, isn't it? It's two grounds where traditionally of late we don't fare particularly well, St. Mary's and then Stoke at the weekend. And a good result for Southampton, a bad result for Liverpool, really, who I can't believe keep kind of just leaving the door ajar. They should really be qualified for the top four by now, especially without having had any European distractions. But, yeah, I mean, I guess our slim hopes are alive. I spent last night sort of doing sums and looking at the fixtures, and I think Liverpool are our only hope. I think City's games are kind of too easy, really. I think they've got some very winnable matches. Mm. I think they'll be fine. Liverpool ought to be all right, but I don't know. Hopefully they just keep stumbling and we keep winning. But it's still a big, big ask, I think, given our games. I mean, even Everton on the final day is not an easy one.
No, not at all. But look, you know, We did it yesterday. Neither of us predicted a win. We both predicted, well, I predicted a defeat, and you predicted a draw for that one. So we were both pleasantly wrong. I'm glad to be completely wrong. However, I hope I'm right for this one. Oh, Southampton. Yeah, I've got a win for Southampton, and you've got a draw. So let's hope that we're both, well, one of us is right this time. That would be good.
Yeah, that would be nice. That would be nice. And also, I really enjoy, because I'm so used to, after top six games, seeing stats about Arsene Wenger's record and, you know, how many games Arsenal haven't won in these competitions. Yeah. It's so nice to see some stats about Jose Mourinho going around yesterday, never having won a league fixture at the Emirates Stadium and not having scored away against a top six side for a long time. I can't even remember what it is. It was long enough that I, you know, took a lot of satisfaction from it now. So that was nice to see a bit of a change. I think it's 913 days since he last beat a top six side away from home.
Jose Mourinho.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
913 days. If he fails to win at Spurs in a couple of weeks' time, he'll pass the big 1,000 mark. So, yeah, nice to see the tables turned a little bit there.
Yes, it is. It is. Okay, well, good. Yes. I'm all for everything that makes Jose Mourinho unhappy or sad or indeed turns people against him in a very real way. So,
sure. Right. Pitchforks and all that.
All right. Anything else catch your eye from the weekend, or shall we take a break and come back with questions?
I think let's take a break and come back with some questions.
All right. Let's do that then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arseblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arseblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arseblog. Welcome back to the Arsecast Extra. This is the part of the show where we answer questions that you send to us on Twitter at Gunnarblog and at Arseblog, and also on the Arseblog Facebook page, facebook.com/TheArseblog. Before we get into those, just want to remind you that there are a very few tickets left for our live Arsecast Extra FA Cup final week, Thursday, May 25th at Union Chapel in the bar upstairs. It's going to be, it's a lovely room. We did our very first live podcast there, James.
We did indeed. Mm. Returning home.
Returning home at long last. So there are a few tickets left, but I think they're only available through the Union Chapel website. So if you're looking, go to unionchapel.org.co.uk. No, unionchapel.org.uk. That's what it is. unionchapel.org.uk. You'll see a What's On link. Click there and you can buy tickets for the Arsecast Extra. As I said on the blog, James, we're not Natalie Imbruglia, unfortunately. We can't play down in the main, the beautiful main room, but
Well, it's nice. We'll go and have a look at it before and just marvel at its beauty. But this is a pretty room nonetheless, and it's got a bar in it, hasn't it?
It's got a bar. The bar is going to stay open late, I think, and we can have a few beers before, during and after, some good FA Cup chat and everything else. So come, please, please join us. That would be great.
Yeah. Be lovely to see you there.
It certainly would. Now, you bought a Roy Hodgson mask at the weekend. What? Why did you do that?
I've got it on my desk now. I'm looking at it. Why did I buy it? Well, I was I was in Brighton, and I was walking along, and I was, it was in sort of one of those strange tourist shops that sells, like, you know, a little miniature Big Ben that's actually a functioning clock and things like that.
Right.
And there was a stall outside, and it just had... It was, I think it was the sort of thing where you would imagine they would have all different masks of different celebrities, but it was just entirely Roy Hodgson masks. It was just like this huge wall of Roy Hodgson masks. And it was available for $3.99. I don't know if it was more when he was England manager, or, you know, if it's come down since, or maybe they're more valuable now because they're at a premium. You can't get them as easily. But I don't know. I bought it. I mean, I'll wear it at the live Askcast Extra, if you like, for the entire thing.
Well, not for all of it, but certainly I think it would be fun for about 8 seconds.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing. And if you can't spend $3.99 on 8 seconds, then what sort of position are you in? I mean, I don't know when it'll be useful, but I know it will be eventually. Mm. We will find out. Keep listening, guys. And 1 week I'll report back and say, remember when I bought that cardboard mask of Roy Hodgson's face? You'll never believe how handy it proved last week. Yeah. I can't wait till that day. And all the doubters out there who thought this purchase was mere folly, they'll apologise to me and to say, James, you were right all along. Congratulations on such an astute acquisition.
Well done. There is a shop in town here that sells these weird masks. I know the kind, and they have loads of weird, odd celebrities, like, I don't know, Ozzy Osbourne and, you know, people who are famous but you haven't thought about for years and years and years. And they have these masks of them on the thing. Just the idea of a Roy Hodgson-only mask shop is something else, though, isn't it?
It is bizarre. I mean, the good thing that you know about that shop, because obviously you can decide who you want to be at the Askcast Extra Live. You know, you can find your own mask. Oh, what? My God, speaking of celebrities you haven't thought about.
Go on.
I tell you what, I think I've got my first question, actually.
Oh, yeah?
Hang on, let me have a look.
Okay.
It came in last night from Garrett Kreutzeiger, who's at Garrett K on Twitter. He's written it all in caps, so he's obviously...
Oh, he's very serious.
Real distress, yeah. Guys, I need you... He's got almost no punctuation as well.
Oh, my God.
Pure panic.
Yeah, he's off his box.
He's really stressed out.
Yeah, he's fucked.
Guys, I need you to discuss this. Alexis just shared a video of him and his dogs with Phil Collins playing in the background. What do I feel?
You feel...
Betrayed?
Yes. Someone sent it to me last night on Twitter, and I meant to actually respond to them. They said, you've got to check out Alexis Sanchez's new story on Instagram. So in the middle of all my work, I took a couple of moments and opened up my Instagram and looked at it, and I said, oh, look at the two dogs. They're so happy together. They're having a great time. And then I noticed the soundtrack. I think it was, what's that, the one about where the man is begging on the street and Phil Collins just goes up to him and, like, pisses on his head and steals his money and, you know, he's a bag lady guy.
I think that's just a documentary about Phil Collins' life, isn't it? I don't know.
The Another Day in Paradise, that one.
Oh, yeah.
So it's that song and that terrible piano thing. And well, look, you know, I think it's fair to say that Alexis Sanchez is a flawed character. He's at times an amazing footballer, and other times he gives the ball away ridiculously cheaply. Other times you're going, wow, look at the character he's got. And then you go, well, that's not the best way to behave, Alexis Sanchez. He loves his dogs. He loves dogs like no man loves dogs, really. And I love that about him. He's got Adam and Humber, and he showers them with love and affection. They're a huge part of his life, and that's something to admire and something to cherish. But then he also plays Phil Collins music to his dogs, which I think is... It's cruel and unusual punishment. I guess the thing is, so it's just part and parcel. There's good Alexis and there's bad Alexis. There's two. He's like the angel and the devil on the shoulder.
And Alexis and Hyde.
Yeah. And this is obviously, this is part of the evil Alexis. There's no other explanation for it.
There is no other explanation. I mean, most Instagram stories are evil in some capacity or other, I believe. But he's sent to test us, isn't he? He gives us mixed messages and he's testing our unconditional love.
Mm.
We can forgive him, I think, in this instance. He forgive him. He knows not what he does.
I don't forgive him. I don't. I compartmentalize it. I just put it in a little box that goes, don't think about that. You know,
okay. You
know that box that lives in your mind?
Yeah, yeah.
Where you go, oh
it's brimful of me.
Oh, yeah, I don't want to think about that. Just leave it in there. And eventually, you know, it'll gnaw away at you and come out in one way or another. But for the moment, that's where I leave it. So I don't forgive him. I don't condone that kind of behavior in any way. I think it's reprehensible. But, you know, score me a winner in the FA Cup final, Alexis Sanchez, and you can play Phil Collins as much as you like, because mostly I don't have to fucking listen to it. So that's the thing. Do you know what
Imagine
we should
if
do?
We did. Oh, go on.
Go
yeah.
on. What we need clearly is for Jose Mourinho to suck the evil out of Alexis Sanchez the way that he sucked the DNA out of Ramirez.
Oh God! Hopefully not exactly the same way. If I'm imagining it in my head, a certain way.
Well, I was thinking like a vampire, James. What were you thinking?
Oh no! Yeah, like a vampire, definitely.
Right.
Yeah,
yeah, oh, yeah. James! For goodness sake.
Yeah, that'd be good. Imagine if Alexis did score the winner in the FA Cup final, and then the evil Wembley tannoy played Phil Collins at the final whistle in celebration. Oh. How would you feel at that point?
I would be conflicted. I won't lie. But I think my enjoyment of winning the FA Cup final would be enough to get me over it. I think I'll bring some earplugs just in case. I keep seeing these ads for these earplugs that you can wear when you're on a plane. They pop up all over. Every time I look at Facebook, they're there. Some kind of weird.
So they he sort of, knows you're into them, weirdly.
Well, maybe it's
weird.
It's,
what have you been Googling?
Nothing. I don't Google anything. Or so whatever I Google is in that box.
Yeah, yeah. the lock box, the secret lock box. What is it about these earplugs that makes them plane specific, if that makes any sense?
I don't know. Apparently they block out all the noise of everything. They block out, like, the engine noise and the noises that are in your head. But I don't think I would like that. I don't think I'd like total silence in my head. No. The minute you have that total silence, the you can just hear their... And there's that box opening up going, hello!
Yeah, that's it.
Remember us!
That's it.
No, thank you.
Yeah,
so,
I'd rather have the hum of the plane and the questions about my in-flight meal. Interesting. Well, that's odd that they keep serving you that. I don't know what it is about you that makes Facebook think, we know how we're going to make our money out of this guy, and it's earplugs.
Yeah, I don't either. But basically, fuck Facebook.
Sure. Okay. But do keep sending in your questions via Facebook.
Yes,
thank
indeed,
you,
please. We love you. We love you. Yeah. Speaking of Facebook, here is a question from Andrew Todd. Well, it's not really Andrew Todd. He says, dead cat bounce. Right? Mm. A dead cat bounce is a small, brief recovery in the price of a declining stock, derived from the idea that even a dead cat will bounce if it falls from a great height. The phrase, which originated on Wall Street, bankers killing cats. I mean, Jesus Christ, there's nothing that those fuckers won't do. Anyway, it is also popularly applied to a case where a subject experiences a brief resurgence following a severe decline. Arsenal feline happy for the moment. Discuss. Did our dead cat bounce?
Wow. Does a dead cat bounce if it's clipped perfectly by Granit Xhaka? Or does it just stop dead? Because he's got such skill on the ball, he can just kill a pass like that. Mm. Is this the dead cat bounce, I guess, of Arsenal? Maybe. There feels something very temporary about our successes at the moment. You know, the FA Cup semi-final win, the win yesterday. In other circumstances, you might embrace it as, oh, we've switched formation and it's getting us some positive, unexpected results. But even the manager himself, you mentioned it earlier, seems cautious to embrace this idea that there's been any kind of real shift. I think he would almost call the changes superficial, probably. And so it's difficult to know what kind of long-term impact it might have. You don't know if we'll get to the summer and maybe the manager goes and maybe everything goes back to the drawing board and this template is being ripped apart. I think that's the issue, isn't it? You want results to feel like something to build upon, but we're dealing in such a short-term mindset at the moment, just looking to the cup final and nothing beyond that, that it's difficult to know how much progress we're really making. Is that fair?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's still a long way to go to convince people that we're back on track or on the right track, you know?
Yeah.
So whether it's our dead cat bouncing or not, I'm not 100% sure. I mean, I think the formation is still an issue. I still don't believe that Arsene Wenger is completely convinced by it. He was asked about it on Sky yesterday and was like, well, you know, it's a formation. And he didn't want to seem to say, yes, the formation has been really good for us. So whether he doesn't want to make the players think that everything is sorted and wants them to keep working on it, or whether he's not convinced by it himself, I'm not 100% sure. But yeah, look, we've got to get to the end of the season. Four more games to play. If we can come out of those four games with the right results, then you might say maybe the cat wasn't dead. Maybe the cat was just pretending to be dead to get away from evil Wall Street bankers who then dropped it out a window and probably killed it. But sorry, it's a quite disturbing
quite
imagery.
Grim,
yeah, this is pretty grim. But no, I prefer my cats very much alive. That's what it comes down to.
Oh, me too. Me too. It's difficult to ascertain, isn't it, if we are a dead cat bouncing or an ailing cat, you know, making a genuine recovery.
Yeah.
Too early to say. We need a vet. We need the super vet to tell us what's going on.
All right, let's have a question.
Okay, this is from Nick Howell on Twitter at Nick4768. And he asks, how disappointed are you that Arsene Wenger didn't celebrate the victory yesterday in a Nelson Vivas manner? And this is an allusion. If you haven't seen the clip of Nelson Vivas, who's a manager these days, I forget where, but he was sent off. He was dismissed from the touchline. And, I mean, could you describe what followed, Andrew? It was extraordinary, wasn't it?
He to say he took umbrage at the decision to dismiss him from the sideline would be understating this in a really big way. Basically, when he was dismissed, a switch went off in his head, like a rage switch. It was like, calm Nelson, angry Nelson. It was, as
the
other people
said, the box opened.
Yeah, exactly. The box opened in his head, and he just went, he lost his mind. He literally lost his mind. People have compared it to the Incredible Hulk. You've got to say, Nelson Vivas is in good shape. He is in good shape for a man of whatever he is, 45, 50 years of age. But he had a pristine white shirt on, and he ripped it open, exposing his chest, and then went storming off, and he was trying to take the shirt off, and I think it must have got caught on his watch or his Fitbit, and he couldn't get one of the sleeves off. But he as he's stalking off the pitch in just the most incredible temper, you see his back, the rippling muscles of his back. And there, I'm not quite sure what the artwork was, but it was... his back is almost entirely tattooed. It was like... did you watch the TV series Hannibal?
I didn't, I'm afraid.
Well, the killer guy, I can't remember his name now. I'm going to have to look it up.
Is it Hannibal, like in...
Yeah, Hannibal Lecter.
Go on.
Francis Dolarhyde, yeah. I think is his name. It's like the Red Dragon, that's who he is, the Red Dragon. And he has all
the Red Dragon, yeah, I saw that, yeah.
He's got all this mad artwork on the back of his, on his back. These huge tattoos, a big dragon, of course, is tattooed onto his back, and he's the serial killer. He's the guy, do you see, look at what I have done. And Nelson Vivas was like the Red Dragon, storming off that pitch, going off down the tunnel, getting into his car, and then going and kidnapping someone and brutally murdering them and flaying them alive. I assume that's what he did afterwards. So would I have liked to see Arsene Wenger celebrate the win in that way? I'm not sure. I don't think Arsene Wenger should have gone into rage mode at winning, but certainly there was a lot to enjoy about what Nelson Vivas did.
Yes, there was. I'm not sure Arsene Wenger is quite in the shape that Nelson Vivas is as well. I mean, I don't know. We saw those beach photos a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
He may have bulked up a little bit since then, but it's good to see Nelson Vivas probably looking more animated now than he ever did when he was even playing for Arsenal. So, and also a potential successor there to Arsene Wenger. People keep asking the question, who's it going to be? My money's on Vivas.
Get Nelson in. That's right. I mean, he's got the passion. Yes, the passion. Yeah. That's what we need. Passion. And he has mucho pasión. He really does.
Absolutely.
If you haven't seen the video, just check it out. You'll find it on YouTube or on Twitter or wherever. Just Nelson Vivas sent off and just watch in awe at what he does. It's remarkable. It was very, very enjoyable. So here's a question. It's come up from a couple of people, but this is from Humas Teal, who's at WheelieBin101, and he wants to know, what are both your thoughts on players hugging in the tunnel before the kickoff?
Yeah, I actually didn't see this, I have to be honest. I heard it came up on Match of the Day. I mean, how bad? How intimate was it, let's say?
I don't know. I think Monreal might have had a bit of a hug with David De Gea, and I don't know. There would have been a couple of like high fives or whatever, but it wasn't.
It's not. I mean, it's not Keenan Vieira, is it? I guess.
No, it's not. But they weren't snogging either. You know, there was no French kissing or anything.
Sure, Spanish, as the case may be. I don't really have a big issue with that, to be honest with you. I think that to be honest, we all knew that this fixture perhaps wasn't quite the sort of titanic clash that it might have been in other circumstances. And players are going to behave like that. I mean, we all remember Andre Santos getting absolutely pilloried for what happened at Old Trafford, but that was midway through a game. And
Van Persie's fault as well. Van Persie knew fine well what he was doing. He fucking fucked Andre Santos in a big way.
Yeah, I actually remember thinking that I felt the reaction to that was a bit over the top. I'm sure someone can dig me out and say that I said opposite at the time. But on reflection, it does feel a little bit crazy. I mean, I guess we were all very emotional about what happened with Van Persie. But I'm not particularly bothered. I think, look, I sort of hope in the cup final it's maybe not a bit like that, but in this particular game, I'm not really bothered. And they're going to do it anyway. I mean, they know each other. They're friends. They're international colleagues for the most part. I think it's inevitable, and it would be... And I don't believe that behaving like that means that you can't then focus and be a professional during the 90 minutes.
Well, exactly. Doesn't the result show that? Arsenal won the game 2-0. Monreal had a hug with De Gea. De Gea had a hug with Monreal. Which one of them... was it because they had a hug that Manchester United lost? Of course not. Of course not. You know, I think we like to see rivalry. We like to see players who are focused on the game. But, at halftime, Oxlade-Chamberlain went off having a good chat with Wayne Rooney. Rooney doing that thing where you put your hand in front of your mouth so nobody can see what you're saying on the TV. No lip readers out there can do it. But they were having a laugh and a joke going off the pitch at halftime. Did it make any difference? Oxlade-Chamberlain still put in the cross that Welbeck headed home. I think it's too easy to read things into those situations that aren't really there, that aren't really relevant to the game, Look, if players hate each other, I'm all right with that. I don't really care. But if there are two friends in the tunnel who want to say hello to each other before they go out on the pitch, I don't really see the problem with that either. It's not as if they're going to go easy on their mate. You know, if you play football against your mate or football against your brother even, that you're going to give them a harder time, really.
Of course.
I know brother always does when I play against him in five-a-side.
Likewise. Yeah. I mean, I don't really have any particular issue with it at all. Should we have another question?
Sure.
This is from Niall Shannon. This is one of those things where someone's asked a question that I kind of agree with, so I'm just going to read it out to secretly promote my own views. It's at NileMitch14 on Twitter. Niall asks, would you consider moving the Ox to the left wing back position and putting Bellerin in as right wing back? I don't know why we need to play Gibbs.
I would have no real issue with that at all. Oxlade-Chamberlain has played a bit on the left-hand side. I do think that the reason Gibbs is playing is because Monreal is being pressed into action as a centre-half. I don't think it's because Arsene Wenger thinks that Kieran Gibbs is, you know, the long-term solution for left wing-back or, indeed, his best option there. But he's got no Mustafi, he's got no Mertesacker. He obviously didn't want to play Gabriel after what happened at White Hart Lane. But in general, no, it's not something I would have a problem with. And I think I said as much a couple of weeks ago, either on the blog or on here on the podcast, that certainly Oxlade-Chamberlain could play that left wing-back role pretty well. And that would mean you've got two really nice options with Bellerin on the right-hand side, Oxlade-Chamberlain on the left-hand side. But I do think it will be Monreal as soon as Monreal is not needed at centre-half.
Yeah, I'm sure it will be. I'd be interested to see Oxlade-Chamberlain and Bellerin in the same team at wing-back. Yeah, and I think, you know, obviously maybe Arsene Wenger's a bit worried about Ox defensively on that side. But I think if you had Monreal in as the left-sided centre-back, you know, he's a more naturally defensive player who would offer some cover. And it's not as if Oxlade-Chamberlain is that hot defensively, even on the right. So,
yeah, look,
it's something to consider if you're sort of looking at the problem of Oxlade-Chamberlain and Bellerin and how you squeeze them into the same team. Although, it's possible that if Granit Xhaka does have an injury problem, maybe Oxlade-Chamberlain will be the guy to step inside and get some game time in there. So,
oh, that's interesting. I hadn't thought about that because we did have a question. Let me see. Oh, gosh. Where is it gone now? Oh, yeah, from Jonas82, who's at JoeV82, who says, where is Elneny?
It's a great question. It's a great question. I don't know. I guess he's just not making the bench at the moment. Is that it? I mean, it was a strong bench yesterday. Some good players on there.
There was no talk of him being injured. Certainly there was no talk of him being unavailable. Just not picked.
I mean, that's quite extraordinary, really, given how consistent he's been generally when he has been asked to play games. But yeah, looking at the bench yesterday, there's no one on there. You know, you've got you've got Gabriel, Giroud, Ospina, Walcott, Iwobi, Bellerin, Coquelin. You can see why all of those players were included. So maybe he was just the unlucky man. I guess that's a bit of a worry for him. He would be in contention, though, wouldn't he, to come straight in for Xhaka, potentially, if he is available.
Yeah, certainly from the point of view of a guy who can keep things moving and just circulate the ball through the midfield. Doesn't have the range of passing of Xhaka, but, you know, he's very much on the outs for a guy who's never really had what you would consider a bad game for us. He's never had a truly outstanding game either, I don't think. He's never been that guy who's completely dominated the midfield, but he's just really, really reliable, sort of 7 out of 10 reliable. So he's a little bit unfortunate to be on the out, but I hadn't considered Oxlade-Chamberlain as an option for the for midfield. So,
yeah, I don't know. I mean, it might seem odd given that he's doing pretty well at right wing back, but if Arsene does have any intention of, you know, giving Hector Bellerin a go in that position, and he still talks about the Ox as a central player, it feels like a kind of temporary thing, potentially, him being out on the flank. So he does have the ability to pick those passes from deep in the manner that Xhaka does. Maybe a bit more adventurous than Elneny in that regard. So that'll be an interesting one if Xhaka does miss out on Wednesday.
All right. Mighty Igor at Mighty Igor says, it appears Cesc will be surplus to requirements at Chelsea next season. Perfect replacement for Santi? Cesc Xhaka axis? Question mark?
I don't know about that. I don't know. I don't know what Cesc's best position is these days. He's tended to play for Chelsea in a more advanced role, and they've kind of gone with Kante and Matic, haven't they, who are more physical, more offensive players as their holding pair. I kind of think that if you're looking at Cesc, he's more likely to be considered as an option if say, Mesut Ozil was no longer at the club. I think he's better in the more advanced areas of the field. Although, he's 30 now, 10-30, I think, last week, Cesc Fabregas. So maybe, like Santi Cazorla, he will settle into a more defensive role in the coming years. Look, for all that's happened with him, he remains one of my favourite Arsenal players, certainly one of our best players of the Premier League era. And I have to say, I would still... I think I would still take him back, actually. I still think there's a few good years left in Cesc Fabregas. Even if he's not playing for you week in, week out, I think he's got 9 assists in the Premier League this season, and he's not been a regular at all. So I think that tells you something about his creative qualities. I would not... I don't think I would say no. What about you?
Oh, I love me some Cesc. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I know, I'm an old romantic. What can I tell you? I just love him as a player. I think he's still a fantastic player. I'd have him back. Why not? Mm. Fuck it. You know, we've got to be a bit more cynical about our transfer business. Let bygones be bygones. You know, it's not as if he didn't... it's not as if he turned us down to go to Chelsea. You know that way. We didn't take up the option that we had on him. So what's the guy going to do? Sit down and just not play football ever again? I don't think that's the a realistic possibility. I think he's still a brilliant player, capable of producing things that maybe a team like us needs from time to time, just that vision. But look, I don't think it's going to happen, but you know, I would, why not?
It would be nice. And get Senderos back in too as one of the centre-halves.
Oh, yeah.
Relive the glory days. Let's have a jolly question. This is Joaquin, who's at Morning Pint from the Morning Pint Arsenal podcast. He asks, what are your favourite match-winning goals against Manchester United?
Oh, well, there's the obvious comparison, isn't there? The goal that Welbeck scored is very, very similar to the goal that Thierry Henry scored. I put it up on Twitter almost immediately afterwards going, remember that goal that Henry scored a few years ago? And people went, yeah, not necessarily a few years ago. That was 10 years ago, which made me feel fucking really old. So that was the Aboué cross, and that was a last gasp winner. I obviously like the 1979 FA Cup final goal, Alan Sunderland scoring, and one that I watched the other day and I thought, fucking hell, that is a brilliant goal, was David Platt's header in the 3-2 game at Highbury. I think it was 1997, and we'd gone 2-0 up, and Anelka scored a fucking brilliant goal. Do you remember? That was sort of like Anelka announcing himself as a player, as somebody who had the ability to really play top-level football. He smashed in a shot past Schmeichel, and then Vieira scored this really quite odd curling goal, a shot from the edge of the box.
I love that goal too.
It was great. And United came back into it. I think Gilles Grimaldi was playing centre half. Teddy Sheringham maybe scored one or two goals.
Twice, I think, maybe.
Yeah, so that was really annoying. Then we have a corner in the final couple of minutes. Nigel Winterburn takes the corner. And David Platt, who was never really my favourite player because of his gigantic moon head. I just could never...
Sure.
I could never warm to him because of the size of his big moon head. Used that moon head in a remarkable way. And you could not, if you were drawing a goal, place that ball better than he did. You know, he headed the ball with side spin, with dip, with pace, into just a very, very top corner of the goal. Absolutely brilliant header. And for me, that's one of my favourite goals against Manchester United.
Yeah, it was an incredible header, really, just perfectly arced into the far corner. Sort of as fascinating an arc as Vieira's, really, in the same game, just off the head, not the foot. What else would you have in there? I guess Mark Overmars in 1998.
Oh, yeah.
At Old Trafford. And Sylvain Wiltord has to be a contender, doesn't it? I mean, was that a winning goal? I think. Yes.
Yeah.
That was clinching the title at Old Trafford.
And that provided that brilliant moment, didn't it, with Kanu, where Wiltord, the camera's on Wiltord, and he's got his hands in the air, and Kanu leaps over him, but you've got no perspective on the shot. It looks like Wiltord is standing up, and Kanu has somehow leapt about 6 foot into the air to hurdle him. But of course, Wiltord is on his knees.
I believe that Kanu celebration was the inspiration for Francis Coquelin's attempted block against Wayne Rooney at the weekend.
Yeah, some good goals down the years. I'm sure we're forgetting a couple as well.
Even in the FA Cup quarterfinal a couple of years ago, Danny Welbeck scoring at Old Trafford, that was a nice one. Was Thierry Henry's great goal against United a winner, the clip and the volley?
That was a 1-0, I think. That was a 1-0 win, as far as I can remember.
That would have to be in there. But yes, I think that Overmars one in 1998, because that really was a huge step towards Arsene Wenger's first Premier League title in English football.
Mm. Another, before we move on, another goal I like against United is an Henry one. I think it was a 1-1 draw at Highbury, but he just picked the ball up about 35 yards from goal and just unleashed a rocket of a shot. He hit the ball so hard. Roy Carroll, it went straight at him, but Carroll just couldn't get his hands up in time. Amazing hit from Henry. That. Yeah.
He played up front with Jose Reyes in that
yes.
game, I seem to recall.
Yeah.
It was around the time there was a lot of talk about, you know, did they pass to each other? Would they collaborate on the pitch? And I remember, I think Reyes passed to him for that goal. Everyone was terribly excited about that. But yeah, Martin Tyler's commentary on that goal, it's thrashed in, he says. He's thrashed in from Omri.
Well, yeah. Right, yeah, that's a good one. But yeah, there have been many down the years. Okay, here's a question from Eric Sobey, who's at Sobey_AFC. Who are the all-time members of the Danny Welbeck imperfect but likeable all-star team?
I don't know, but Danny Welbeck's probably the captain, isn't he? I mean, he is frustrating at times, but the most likeable of footballers.
Mm.
Who else would you have in there? I'm just trying to think now. I mean, you know, I guess guys like Johan Juru, very likable chap, excellent on the social media, really good at hosting for Arsenal Fan TV, but not the perfect defender in his Arsenal days in any respect.
No, Podolski, would he be one of those?
Yeah, I guess he would, actually. I guess he would. Great character, but some tactical question marks. I'm just trying to think who else now.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go through.
I mean, Manuel Almunia was a very nice guy, by all accounts. Very popular in the dressing room. You know, that's your goalkeeper right there, I think.
Well, yeah. There's just too much baggage for me. I don't dislike Almunia at all as a person, but I can't quite bring myself to, you know, get on board.
Embrace him and that. What about Carl Jenkinson at the back?
Yeah, that's a good one. That's definitely a good one. Yeah, Jenkinson would be a really good one. You can't not like Carl Jenkinson, for goodness sake. You know, that guy is Mr. Arsenal. He breeds Arsenal. Breeds Arsenal? Breathes Arsenal.
He breeds Arsenal players in a laboratory.
Yes.
He gets Jose Mourinho to suck DNA out of people and uses it to re-inject into our academy prospects. I'm just trying to think other likable players. I mean, until recently, you would have had Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain firmly in that category, I imagine. But maybe he's turned a bit of a corner there.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe so. Kim Schallström?
Yeah, why not? Why not? You need a penalty taker.
For sure. Who else have we got in there? Is Joel Campbell one of those?
Yeah, I guess he is, actually. Poor old Joe. I haven't thought about him much this season, have you?
No. I can't necessarily say I'm missing him, to be perfectly honest. You know, because we got a perfect replacement in Lucas Perez. Lucas Perez could be one of those as well.
Yes, Lucas Perez. Did you see the stories from him talking about a possible... I mean, you never know the context, really, with some of these foreign quotes, but talking about a possible return to Deportivo at some point. He's sort of confirmed that he wishes he'd played more. And I don't think he's the only one who thinks that about his season, to be honest.
No, no. It's a bit of a shame, actually, because he's got some very useful qualities, I think. Yeah, there's probably a good few, but we'd have to take a lot of time to go through the squads and check them out. So, have you got one more?
One more question. Let's have a look. I probably do, but I've not got it to hand. So, this bit of me talking will contain no useful information. It's literally just filling time.
Filling time until you can scroll okay. and click and...
yeah, exactly.
You ready? You got
and
it?
And I've done it. Yeah, I mean, that was absolutely seamless, guys. I'm a pro at this.
Absolutely.
Okay. So, at Charlie Barlow, at Chazabar, says, does the new formation promote less reliance on Alexis Sanchez? And is that good for next season if he leaves?
It depends on what Alexis Sanchez you use, you know? Because maybe Alexis Sanchez up front in this formation might be really good. But obviously he doesn't feel like he wants to play there because he wants to get involved with the ball, wants to come to the ball and be on the ball as much as possible, which you can't do, I don't think, if you're playing as the lone striker in this formation. I thought it was interesting that we won yesterday's game without Alexis making a really telling contribution, either in terms of a goal or an assist. I'm not saying that that's a good thing or a bad thing. I just thought it was interesting that we could win a game without him, because he has been pretty much a match winner for us. And when you think about our games against the big teams, you would assume that someone like Alexis Sanchez will make a contribution in some way. We spoke earlier about the fact that he and Ozil come a bit too deep. Whether they blossom into this system, I'm not quite sure. But you know, you feel like you could probably put someone like Alex Iwobi into the team in Alexis's position yesterday, and would it have made that much difference to the way that we played? Do you think?
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I don't know. I guess it, as much as it depends what Alexis you get, it kind of depends which Iwobi you get, if it's the one from the first half of the season or the,
sure,
or the second. It is interesting, this whole system thing. I mean, we are existing, as I say, in quite a short-term world at the moment. I mean, the end of the season's always a bit like that, but it makes such a difference to our summer planning, doesn't it? And as much as you want to have flexibility about your tactics, you do feel like, if Arsene Wenger remains at the helm, or even if a new manager comes in, we kind of need a decision on what is our system, because, you know, player recruitment, everything kind of has to be built around that. Mm. And whether or not Alexis stays or goes, of course, will be a huge factor in that department.
Mm. All right, I've got one more before we go. This is from Ben H, who's at Neon Away Shirts, and he says, "Are Arsenal Football Club trying to get free Maltesers by eating them on the bench, a la Arsecast Extra with Hartley's jam?"
Well, I think, to be honest, they have taken a leaf out of our book, haven't they? They've taken a ruffle from our crisp packet there.
Look,
what did you make of... it wasn't the players, was it, eating the Maltesers?
I don't really know. I mean, there seemed to be a bag of Maltesers being passed around on the bench.
Sure. We don't know whose fingers were in there, to be honest.
Yeah, that's the thing about Maltesers. You've got to pour them out of the bag into a hand. You can't have... It's like the old...
It's a hygiene issue.
Yeah, it's like the double dip thing from Seinfeld. You know that?
Yeah. I know that way. But I think... look, I really like a Malteser, to be honest. I think they're an underrated chocolate, if anything. I think time has maybe lessened people's appreciation for them, but they still have a lot of value. I'm glad to see my Maltesers out there. And if we line up next season with Maltesers on the front of our shirt, I would definitely find that easy to go. It'd be sensible too, because it's red and white. I think that Maltesers, the Malteser Stadium, why not?
Malteser Arena?
The Malteser Arena, that's got a ring to it. I mean, you know, we're handcuffed into these long-term Emirates deals, but if Maltesers come in hard enough, you never know what's possible.
Yeah, I'm not mad for Maltesers now, I have to say. Not
really?
Mad for them. Yeah, just every so often you get a bad one. You get a wrong one.
That's true. What's going on there? The mutant Maltesers.
Yeah, they're all chewy, and you're going, is this like a bee's nest or something that's inside this chocolate? Or is it supposed to be a crispy, crunchy, malty easer? Whatever an easer is. I mean, that's the whole point of them. But every so often, you just get this one where you go, this is like eating, I don't know. It feels, do you know what it is? You know what? I'm figured it out just as we've been speaking about it. Jose Mourinho has sucked the DNA out of Ramirez and infiltrated the Mars factory, and in a nefarious way managed to create at least one mutant Malteser that goes into every bag that is basically just the powdery, disgusting Ramirez DNA wrapped in chocolate, and everyone who eats a bad Malteser is eating Ramirez's DNA, and they have Ramirez inside them right now.
And he's hoping that this will enable a whole new generation of Ramirez's to be born. I mean, it makes so much sense. It must be true.
It can't be anything other than true. What an... just when you thought his evil knows no bounds...
He's infiltrating the Malteser factory.
Well, that's me and Maltesers done. I would suggest to the Arsenal bench, whoever had those Maltesers, out. Get them out of the club. Throw them out. Fire them. Maybe we have to do like with zombies. We're going to have to burn them.
I think Jose Mourinho gave those Maltesers to the Arsenal bench as a supposed peace offering before the game to Arsene Wenger.
Yeah.
And then, you know, that was all just part of his plan.
Yeah.
Yes, it's going to be a shame to set fire to Shad Forsyth because he's eaten a Malteser. But I don't see that we have any alternative.
No, look, you just can't let the infestation spread. It'll be like World War Z at London Colney if this keeps going. So. All right, well,
we have no choice.
No, we don't. But look, we have got a game on Wednesday against Southampton. Let's keep fingers crossed for that. We will look back on that game and look ahead to a fun-filled trip to Stoke at the weekend on the Arsecast on Friday. Don't forget to get your tickets for the Arsecast Extra live from the Union Chapel website, unionchapel.org.uk. There are only very few tickets left, as far as I know, so they could all be gone today. So get moving if you want to go to the show. We'll be back next Monday to talk about what happens next weekend. So until then, folks, thanks a million for listening.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.